Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I have the pleasure of talking with author C.S. Marks about her new book, Elf Hunter, A Tale of Altera. This is the first in a trilogy of fantasy fiction geared for both adult and young adult readers. So C.S. Marks, who goes by Chris, has often been described as a Renaissance woman. The daughter of academic parents, she holds a Ph.D. in biology and has spent the past two decades teaching biology and equine science. She is currently a full professor at St. Mary of the Woods College in West Central Indiana. So Chris began writing shortly after the untimely death of her father, who was a professor of American Lit at Butler University. A gifted artist, she has produced illustrations and cover art for all three of her books. Chris plays and sings Celtic music, writes songs both silly and serious, and she is an archery aficionado and makes handcrafted longbows using primitive tools. Horses are her passion, and Chris is an accomplished horsewoman, having competed in the sport of endurance racing for several years. So I'm so excited to talk with Chris today. She's launching her trilogy. We get to talk with her as her first book is coming out. So happy to have her on the phone. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Chris.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you today.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I just wanted to congratulate you on really the overwhelming success that you're having so far with Elf Hunter. You know, I hear that you're getting a really great response from both young and adult readers. How does it feel?
Well, needless to say, it feels pretty darn good.
Yeah.
I am very, very pleased at the response I've been getting from readers of all ages. But in particular, the younger ones surprised me because the books were not written for them, but they have just taken it to their hearts and loved it, and it's really grand to see the response in the young ones.
Oh, great. I didn't know that you had written this geared for more of an adult audience.
Yeah, I actually wrote it for me, come to think of it. It's written and on a level that can be appreciated, I believe, by many age groups, and I love to read young adult fiction myself, and so maybe I'm just young at heart or something.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I had not intended to write young adult fiction, but as it turns out, it's filling that niche very well.
Yes, they're embracing it, that's for sure. So what is the actual title for this trilogy?
I guess if it had to have a title, it would be The World That Is.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I kind of thought it was. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, it's the literal translation from the Elvish of the word Altera, which is the name of this world. And this is C.S. Marks' brand of Elvish, which is a sort of a debased, anglicized Gaelic. Probably Irish readers have to laugh at some of my Elvish. They probably think it sounds a little bit like Pidgin English. But the word Altera means the world that is. And I just thought it was kind of a neat way that people might refer to their world. In other words, it would be a sort of a translation of the real world to them.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's not a real world, I guess it's real to me and it's real to them. So that's why it's called The World That Is.
Great. Well, tell us a little more about Altera, and I know that, you know, as you just kind of mentioned, and I've heard and read in other interviews you've done, that you really wanted to create a sense of realism within mm-hmm. this fantasy world.
Yeah, I did, and I think there are two reasons for that, and I don't think one of them is lack of imagination, but that is always possible. I think the reason is that, first of all, I like to write what I know about, and I know a great deal about the wild places of this world, and so I felt I could really place the reader in the scene by making the world Earth-like. Also, I think it is But there is a tendency to make fantasy worlds so amazing and so fantastic that they may detract from the point of the story or the characters themselves. Readers might get so wrapped up in how unique a particular world is that the characters become secondary, and this is a very strongly character-driven book.
Okay. So tell us about Alterra. Paint a picture for us.
Primitive, non-industrialized, and Earth-like. Not highly magical, although there are certainly elements of magic there. If one is a mythology aficionado, you may find some parallels, and certainly you can look at a fantasy world like Middle Earth, which is also very Earth-like, and make comparisons there. But we can also make comparisons with Europe and North America. There are ordinary challenges that pre-industrialized people face, like big tall mountains and oceans and deserts and things that people in our world might be familiar with or might aspire to become familiar with. Not too many, no strange dimensions or spirit-inhabited places or anything like that, but there are elements of magic there, but they are secondary to the actual characters and the central plot of the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about the plot. What happens in Elf Hunter?
It's essentially a monster hunt, but it turns into so much more than that. The initial scene involves two heroines, and these two heroines are central throughout all three books. Their names are Galen and Nelwyn, and they are wood elves. Wood elves in Alterra are sort of viewed as lesser elves by some of the more lofty and poncy elves in the world. They are very earthy folk and very much in touch with their environment. Galen and Nelwyn are hunter scouts by profession, which is sort of like a terrestrial coast guard, and they're out in the woolly wild doing their thing when they discover the remains of two of their good friends who have been set upon by an unknown enemy. And they haven't just been set upon, they've been really brutally set upon, and this basically gets Galen's fire going in particular. Galen is a very passionate character, and she basically vows vengeance, and like, look, we have to hunt this fella down, or these people down, and do something about this. So off they go on a quest to find the elf hunter, whose name is Gorgon. And he's, I don't want to sound like I'm not humble or anything, but he's an awesome villain.
Mm-hmm, he is.
And they pursue him through thousands of miles, basically, and pick up all kinds of other characters along the way. But the main focus of the story centers around the interaction between Gorgon and the main protagonist, Galen, and the way that the two of them are altered by that interaction. It's a book about free will and about choices as well. This is kind of the central theme. You have to read all the way to the end to really get there, but it is a central theme.
Great. So how long were these, the two characters, the two wood elves, Galen and Nelwyn, how long were they kind of in your mind before they came out into this story?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I've written other fiction. I've not ever gone to the trouble of putting it into the public eye, although there was some elf-based fiction that saw sort of an underground publication years ago. There's been a Galen-like character in almost all of my fiction that I've written, and Nelwyn actually is based on someone I know, and Galen is too.
Yeah,
some of the characters are, they have real counterparts in the real world, and actually those people are very flattered by the fact that they have a character. Now, I'm happy to say that Gorgon is not based on anyone I know.
but good to know.
Indeed it is. I think I'd be reporting him to the authorities by now. But no, these people have real counterparts, and I have known about these two characters in some form or other for quite a number of years. This is just their latest bit of development, and it's a considerable bit of development now.
Great. So do we see them evolve through the three books in your trilogy?
Very much so. Okay. All of the characters evolve in some way.
Mm-hmm.
The main ones, the major characters in particular, there's an elf named Galador who pretty much throughout Elf Hunter, people sort of consider him two-dimensional and not terribly intriguing. He's almost a secondary character, but then in the second and third books, we really see him evolve and develop, and we realize why he was the way he was in the first book. So you all of the characters are developed, and the one who I think undergoes the most development of all is the villain.
He really does undergo
a transformation. He doesn't, I mean, I can't give too much of the story away, but it's interesting that I find two-dimensional villains incredibly dull, and so I wanted to make a complex character out of him and one that people could occasionally empathize with. Yes, you want to see him gone, but you also understand him a lot better by the time you get to the end. Even the end of Elfhunter, you understand him quite well.
Isn't that interesting? I bet that was a very fascinating process for you to kind of evolve him, because he is really your evil character. So it's got to be, I don't know, I would think in the writing process it was a very interesting experiment for you.
Oh, very much so. It is tough to put yourself in his place because you don't think that way. I mean, I hope I don't. It's like, okay, you really have to use your imagination and draw from examples in our own history and so forth, and just, okay, if I were consumed by hatred, what would my response be? Sometimes that's difficult, but I think I pulled it off well, and the reason I know that, and you know, again, not to sound like I'm blowing my own horn, but the reason I know that is the response of the readers. I am always guided by what they tell me, because most of them I've never met. They say things like, "Why I had to leave the light on for a while."
Oh, that's great.
And I'm thinking, wow, and I have nightmares about him.
Oh, wow.
Okay. We've had a couple of readers say that. He's invaded their nightmares.
Oh, no.
And then the ending of the third book, which has been test read by a number of my worthy volunteers, is there is a scene at the end of book three that will make you think for quite a while.
Oh, interesting.
About things both spiritual and real, and I think I'm very, very pleased with the ending, and it had to be the best. It had to be, because it's the ending of this trilogy. So Gorgon is an excellent villain, if I do say so myself. He's complicated. You want to know more about him from the moment he is introduced.
Yeah, I know he's one of your favorites. Yeah. So why did you, getting back to the two wood elves, why did you decide to cast your two central characters, these two, as heroines instead of heroes?
Well, because I can. And because, well, you look at some of the classic fantasy, okay, and science fiction is just as guilty. And there are relatively few heroines that are not either, you know, breastplate-wearing xenotypes, or some of them are damsels in distress, and some of them are totally dependent on the males, and some of them are crewman Sue, who saves the universe, and I didn't want any of those. I wanted female characters whose gender really is irrelevant. Why not heroines? And there are heroes too. There are role models for both genders of readers. What I think is interesting is that the young males, young boys who read Elfhunter just love Galen to death.
Oh.
And the older ones like Nelwyn, and that's kind of interesting. Nelwyn and Galen are very different in nature and in appearance. Girls want to be Galen. They want to be Galen, they love her to bits, and they want to emulate her, and they'll write to me and say, "Oh, I'm just like her. I'm just like her." And if they're thinking about cutting their hair short, you know, I tell them, "Well, don't go off the deep end." But that tells me that character is very real to them. If they put themselves in her shoes, that means that they identify with her, they believe in her, that she is a real character. And isn't it nice that they don't have to identify with a male?
Absolutely. Don't you think it's just so important to add that relatability to your central characters?
Oh, otherwise they're, what's the point?
Yeah, very
Yeah, if I can't, and I don't care if the main character is a unicorn, if it's well developed, I can put myself in the scene with it, mm-hmm. if not even imagine being it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be physically resembling any real character, but it has to be developed and have a soul that is real and a presence that is real, and it has to be flawed. Perfect characters are just as boring as two-dimensional evil dark lords. Mm-hmm. It's, okay, I'm evil and I want to take over the world. That's very good. Now go back in your box now. I believe that it is very important that characters have their feet solidly in real problems, real interactions that our readers can relate to.
Yes, absolutely. So getting back to the idea of heroines, why do you think that there is such a lack of believable heroines in fantasy novels?
You know, I don't know. I see a lot of novels with heroines in them anymore. I do see more than I used to, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are very well done, and some of them aren't. And I wonder whether either people may be trying too hard, or I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. I'd like to say, well, because I'm just so good at it. But, you know, that might turn people off. So I won't. I didn't.
Okay, all right. Okay.
No, there are some wonderful heroines in fiction these days, and I'd like to see more of them, as I would like to see wonderful, believable male characters, too, because
yeah.
they have their share of two-dimensional, boring characters. It's not just the females that have them.
Yes, good point. Good point. Well, talking to about another one of your male characters, let's talk a little bit about Orgond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hear that he is very much appealing to young male readers. Tell
mm-hmm.
us about him, and what's the appeal?
Well, he's the one that 90% of the young male readers who have given me feedback about it want to be like. They want to emulate Orgond. And you know, parents out there, a person could do worse, okay? Orgond is a wonderful role model. He also has a real counterpart, and the person that he is based on is a man that I have known for a number of years. He is one of the most steadfast, loyal, honest people I've ever met. Unassuming, he's a wonderful character, and everybody should be so lucky as to know someone like that. So Orgond, well, what a great model for a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, I mean, Orgond is nice looking, and he fights well, and he has all the skills that, you know, kids who are into games and kids who are into anime and kids who like heroes that are really impressive won't be disappointed with Orgond either. But the main thing that is important about him is his character. The fact that he is about as straight an arrow as you can get, and yet he is not perfect, he's flawed. His main flaw is that he's indecisive, which occasionally leads him into great difficulty. But as far as a person that you would want to know, want to have for a friend, he's the best.
He is. So how does he fit into the story?
Well, when we first meet Orgond, he's kind of in a bad way because mortal men in Alterra, unfortunately, are subject to illness, and Orgond is in the grip of a rather serious illness when we first meet him. The elves, of course, do not know what to do about it because that's not something that they are heir to, and they don't know what to do. Galen, who is the kind of little tomboyish, passionate little character, fire-hearted little character, sings to him. This is one of her great talents. She sings to him, and she comforts him in his illness. And in the state of delirium that he's in, he falls in love with her. And this is not advisable for him to do, but he can't help himself. And because Oregon's middle name is Loyal, I mean, his real name is Thalen, which translates to trustworthy, he is not going to give it up, and he basically, there's a whole controversy over whether will Orgond get his elf or not. Galen is a very complicated little character, and it's not as easy as it sounds to win her, and so there is a whole, there's a lot of romance in these novels. It's not heavy-handed,
mm-hmm.
but there is, certainly we need that. That is part of our lives.
Yes.
Whether we like it or not, romance is part of our lives, and some of the best fantasies I've read are rife with it.
Yes.
So, good stuff.
Good. Wonderful.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Hi there. ReaderViewsKids.com is an amazing website where you can actually read book reviews created by kids themselves. Major reviewers and most online reviewers have adults reviewing children's books. Not only that, adults write the children's books, adults publish the children's books, and adults decide which books the children will read. See where I'm going with this? Sounds like it's a little imbalanced, and ReaderViewsKids has wanted to bring the children back into the picture. Check out ReaderViewsKids.com and read their opinions today. You may be amazed at what they have to say.
And now back to Inside Scoop Live with your host, Juanita Watson.
So, you know, I want to talk now about another one of your characters or group of characters. Your books are just, you know, laden with great, great characters. Let's talk about the horses.
No, please.
Let's talk about them. You know,
they're my favorites.
Yes, and you have such a long history, personal background, working with horses. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your own interest in the equines and then the horses, how they play out in this story, how they're included.
Okay, sure. Love to.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I must state that if one is a horse lover, these books are candy for you.
Mm.
You will love them because not only do we have wonderful horse characters, but there are illustrations of the horses throughout the books because I love to illustrate with them. I have been involved with horses basically since I was born. I was born with a genetic disorder called equophilia. I mean, I figure it's got to be genetic. I don't know that it actually exists. But my current job, I am a professor of equine science. I have the best job in the world for me.
Wow.
And I teach young women, because this is a women's college where I work, I teach young women how to become professionals in the horse industry, and I teach all the physiology and anatomy and science aspects of horse care. But I have always loved and tried to surround myself with horses and just over the years I've competed in various things and I've worked in all kinds of barns and training stables and whatnot, whatever I could find because this is my true passion. And recently I've discovered the sport of endurance racing probably in the past 10 to 12 years. And in 1998, I was one of the only international riders and one of about a dozen Americans to complete the Australian National Championship endurance ride called the Tom Quilty.
Oh, wow.
This is a 100-mile challenge that I completed in about 14 hours. It was very difficult, and I've done a number of 100-mile rides here in North America. But it's the sort of the ultimate extreme in equestrian sport.
It sounds grueling.
Oh, I love it, though. It's so much fun. And the horses love it. And I take excellent care of them. So the readers don't need to worry about my horses because I finish rides in good shape. My horses are ready to go out and do more ride the next day.
Oh,
so
great.
And of course, I've lived with horses, and I know them inside and out. And you know there's a whole maxim that writers are given, which is write what you know. It's very important, and I must confess that many fantasy books, and I'm not disparaging them for the quality of the book, but often the quality of the horse interaction is lacking because the writers don't know anything about them. This is where Elf Hunter and its sequels really shine because the horse characters are three-dimensional. You are privy to their thoughts. They don't speak because horses don't speak English or any other language out loud other than horse. But you are privy to their thoughts, and their behavior is described. And people who know horses have written to me and said, oh, man, these are the most realistic horses I've ever seen in fiction. They're hilarious. You must just spend all your free time studying them. They don't know. I just hang out with them a lot. So there are many horse characters, but the notable one that appears through all three books is a horse named Eros, and he is Oregon's horse. And he and Oregon are actually very much alike in many ways. Eros is steadfast and strong. He's a great battle mount and all that. He's smart as a whip. He has a very wide streak of mischief in him. And so he gets us into some amusing situations from time to time. He's also a very practical-minded animal. He doesn't get excited. He's the kind of horse you would love to own if you are Oregon. Because he has given himself to that rider and to that rider alone. And horses do that. People don't realize it, but horses do that. My horses get very jealous if I ride other horses.
Is that right?
Oh, yes, they do. I won't go into it because I'll talk all day. But the foil for Eros is a kind of gorgeous silver-gray, typical fantasy horse, pretty boy named Rialta. And Rialta is owned by Galador, the high elf, who is also sort of a pretty boy himself. And Galador loves Rialta because he is the most beautiful and he is the most swift, etc., etc. Well, Eros exploits Rialta constantly.
Uh-oh.
Because of his ego, and Rialta does have an ego. So there are some very amusing interactions between the two of them. And then later on in the series, we are introduced to the memorable Finan, who is a rescue horse, and he is if you can keep a dry eye in your head throughout the story of Finan, you're a better, harder person than I am, or than most of my readers are, be they male or female.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is Toran, who is also a memorable horse, and he rivals Rialta. So there's a wonderful little... anything you can do, I can do better sort of exchange between Rialta and Toran.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I'll be quiet about the horses now because they're among my favorite things to talk about.
Yes, no, it must have been great for you to be able to include them and really, you know, give them a depth that you don't really see with horses in a lot of fantasy fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Really sounds like it was probably a very enjoyable experience for you writing. And they're
mm-hmm.
great. They're great, great characters. I know that the readers are really commenting. They love the horses. They want more
mm-hmm.
of the horses. So
mm-hmm.
that's great. You know, another one of your life experiences as well that's kind of slipped into this book, and, you know, obviously from the book cover where we see, is that Galen with a bow?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. Okay, so archery. Archery comes into this story, and so tell us a little bit about your history with archery.
Well, it's not a storied history. I've enjoyed archery for many years. I like to go out in my yard and peg defenseless burlap, but I like to make handmade bows. That's kind of what sets me apart from the average backyard archer. I'm not a bad shot. I can peg a CD at 15 yards and not crack it on a very rare occasion that I have a lucky shot.
Mm-hmm.
But and I love those free internet CDs that they keep sending you. They make excellent archery targets.
Oh, God.
But
that's the best use I've ever heard for those.
I reckon. Well, they shatter spectacularly.
Oh,
really
I'd love
cool.
to see it.
Oh, man. So, yes, but I like to take a piece of wood and make a bow out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is quite an art, which I'm really only just learning. I can only make about a half a dozen of them a year, and I can make them to anybody's specifications. So every now and then somebody will say, oh, I really want one. Chris, can you make me one? Well, sure, I can. When I'm done, they're really quite amazing pieces of handmade art, and they can also kill a moose.
Yeah.
You know, if one happens to have a grudge against a moose, I've never actually hunted with them,
mm-hmm.
But you certainly, people don't realize it doesn't take much. I mean, the Plains Indians used to hunt buffalo with little short bows that weren't, they weren't all that powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But the point was you got close to what you were hunting.
Yeah.
And so they're pretty amazing. I just find archery to be one of the most graceful and beautiful arts. They certainly are the most elegant weapon ever designed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the way you talk about it as an art. And I wanted to know if you had any deeper or symbolic meanings to include this weapon in your story.
Actually, I would love to say yes, but in truth, I included it because, first of all, in this type of world, it makes sense. The bow would certainly have been developed. It was developed long before firearms. We don't have those in Altera. A bow is a very primitive and ancient weapon, and I just reasoned that it would certainly have been developed here. And, of course, it seems to go with wood elves. Wood elves, you almost always see them as archers. And so I just included it because it made sense and because, again, it's something I know about. Mm-hmm. And so, once again, there are some passages talking about the making of arrows. There are some passages talking about just the difficulty of making a particular shot, and I know that because I do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
So any way that I can make my books more real to the readers is a plus.
Mm-hmm. I love that about your writing. So how much of a spiritual element or, you know, a sort of message-driven theme did you include or weave into Elf Hunter? You know, you had talked earlier about free will and
mm-hmm.
the whole idea of choice is kind of predominant. So how important mm-hmm. was that for you?
Well, it didn't start out to be as important as it ended up, because as you weave this tapestry of a book, threads come in that open up whole new levels for you. And as particularly as Gorgon Elf Hunter develops, I see opportunities to place more of my personal philosophy in. I see opportunities to add a level of complexity to the work. Readers don't have to appreciate those levels. They can read the book, just it's an adventure story with some romance and some intrigue and whatnot. You can read it on that level if you like, but it's difficult to read all the way to the end of the third one and not think about some other things. Galen and Gorgon together in particular evoke a number of spiritual sentiments and a number of philosophical discussions. I've had readers write to me and say, you know, we were having a discussion they were like in a Best Buy looking at computers. We were having a discussion the other day about so-and-so and about what motivated that and what was going on there. And could you enlighten us? And I always write back and say, whatever you think it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So readers are going there.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a wonderful video review of Ravenshade because I have, again, one of my testers has gone out on and done a video review, and he's read all three books. He's been a wonderful test reader for me, and not to give anything away, but he sent me his video, and he really emphasized the fact that he had to stop and think many times, and he's still thinking now.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Well, I think it's what I intended, all in all.
Yes.
And so, when the tapestry emerges the way you intended, it's a wonderful feeling. It's mm-hmm. just, you just have, yes, it all worked out. Because unlike some authors are a lot more organized than I am, and I let the characters drive quite often. I didn't outline the books from beginning to end. I knew where they were going, but I didn't know how I was going to get there. I let the characters drive. And they got me there. They always did.
Mm-hmm.
All the threads got picked up in
yes,
the end.
Yes. It really makes for an interesting writing process. And you just, I mean, if you are kind of go into it that way, so many other things can come into play that you
mm-hmm.
never would have anticipated. So that's,
mm-hmm.
that's a great way to write. Fantastic.
I find writers either do one or the other,
mm-hmm.
and they both produce good works. But you're right. I like to color outside the lines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this allowed me to do that. This allowed the characters to take the story and run with it, and they did.
Mm-hmm. So where can readers pick up Elf Hunter? Through your website? Is it also available on through local and online booksellers?
It is. It is also available. I mean, most of the Waldens have it anymore.
Okay.
And some of the Barnes & Nobles have it. It's slowly making its way outward from the Nexus here in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, it like many small press-type folks, I don't have a whole lot of help with marketing.
Yeah.
So It's tough to get the word out there.
Yes, yes, it really is.
On our website, which is elfhunter.net, you can find direct links to our Amazon pages.
Oh, good.
And that's a good place to buy. Because Amazon's great, and you can get free shipping and everything.
Yes, absolutely.
And if people want to buy books on Amazon, if they email me, because there is a contact link, so they can go right to my email, I will send them a signed book plate to put inside their book, so it's just like coming to a signing and having me sign it.
Oh.
If they email me and tell me their address and how they would like it to be signed, I'll do that so they can buy their books on Amazon and get them signed by the author, even though it's done long distance.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an excellent way to get a signed copy.
That is. That's a wonderful offer. Never heard that before. That's very creative.
Well, we are ingenious.
Yes.
An ingenious lot.
So when are you expecting the second book to come out?
Fireheart will have an 08 publication date. So
okay.
We'll be looking in January, hopefully, for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I certainly hope to have you back on our program to talk about that. I know that we have much to discuss about the evolving characters,
mm-hmm,
and also,
mm-hmm,
you know, we didn't get to touch on today the fact that you yourself did the illustrations,
mm-hmm,
for this book. Which,
and the covers.
And the covers. I mean, you really did it all, and it's incredible. You know, unfortunately, we're somewhat running out of time, and I just wanted to offer you the last little bit here for any of your final thoughts, but I do want to have you back, Chris, for sure.
Well, I will look forward to that quite fervently. And my final thoughts, I would urge readers to try Elf Hunter. It makes a wonderful gift for anyone who likes a good fantasy. I can look anybody in the eye and say, you can give it to your 10-year-old and there's nothing that you need to be worried about, but you might want to leave the lights on for a few days.
Oh, God. All right. Well, we'll leave listeners with that today. Thanks so much for your time, Chris.
Oh, and thank you, Juanita. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. You take care.
You do.
Oh. Well, there you go, listeners. What a wonderful time today talking with Chris. Her website, once again, is elfhunter.net. And we do encourage you to go to her website and check out this book. You know, if you're looking for Christmas ideas, this might be a good one for that person of all ages. So definitely check it out. The book, once again, is Elf Hunter, A Tale of Altera, The World That Is. Fantastic book. You can also go to readerviews.com for a recent book review and online interview with Chris. And so we suggest that as well. Thanks for your time. Thanks for listening to Inside Scoop Live today. I'm Juanita Watson. Catch you next time.
Blog Talk Radio.